Hey, this is Charlie from Wina, All Black number 1116. This is the Hurt Locker part. Tune in.
Before we start, we'd like to thank our communications sponsor, Freedom Internet. Locally owned and operated, Freedom Internet delivers secure residential short stay and commercial fiber internet services. Now ask yourself, when was the last time you updated the security on your in-home router? Don't worry, Freedom Internet will do it for you, keeping you and your family's online experiences safe and fast. Freedom Internet, connecting people and building community. Sign up today at freedominternet.co.nz. Pasifika Rugby Week, we have one of Pasifika and Samoa's finest. From Papatoetoe High School to playing for Toulouse in the French Top 14, this man's career spans right across the board, marking dubs in every avenue that he's stepped in. Lacing up the boots and becoming an All Black is one thing, but to lace up the boots and play 50 caps for the All Blacks is another. Charlie's success story is one for the books. It's a story that inspires me as a Pasifika and young Samoan looking out into the world, but it inspires every young Kiwi as well with dreams of putting on the black jersey. He's not only a good athlete, but he's now a podcaster himself with a couple of the also sparking up bets in that. He's a very well-known savvy investor, and most importantly, he's a husband and a father of three. It's the one, the only, All Black 1116, Charlie Fomuina.
Thanks, brother.
That's a good intro, out there. How are you, bro? All good?
No, I'm good, man. Nah, thanks for that.
Bro, all good.
Happy to be on this podcast, and yeah.
No, appreciate it. Like I was saying before, bro, when I followed the account, because I saw you do one, it was like a video call potty with a guy, and then so I thought, I'll just follow, see what happens. And then when you followed me back, I was like, what the hell? So just grateful to have you on, bro. Really appreciate it. How's the family as well, bro?
Yeah, they're good, bro. We've been back for just over a year now, yeah. So still finding our feet. The transition period's, it is what it is, but it's, we're just happy to be back around family.
And, yeah, I mean.
Familiar places, so yeah.
Yeah, do the kids enjoy being back with the family?
Oh,
bro,
they love it, eh? They grew up pretty much in the French system, so a lot of their best mates are from the UK and Germany and stuff like that, and obviously French as well, but coming back and just being around all the cousins and it's just a different vibe, so they love it. So,
How old's your youngest, bro?
He's 8 now, so he went over at like 3 months.
So does he speak French?
Nah, he can understand French.
Oh, yeah.
But the older two could speak French.
Ooh, so that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, we've been here for over a year, so they're starting to. They haven't spoken it.
Yeah.
Much unless we get into mum, we just talk behind mum's back. But they're good. They love it here.
Right? How's the potty? How's the potty going? How's bits in that?
Yeah, it's a good space, bro. It was obviously it's just something that we wanted to create a space where obviously there's a lot of betting, but probably a lot of betting that just kind of, it's just, how would you say, there's not much research behind it.
Yeah.
We're just trying to come from an angle where obviously Zeke's probably the master at it.
The Oracle, man.
Yeah, the Oracle. And obviously me from the sports point of view, and then we're just trying to give a lot of information out there, and then if people want to go on the back of it, then they're.
Bro, it's cool. Like, and I think one of the other things as well, like we're touching on that, is if you go through like the comment section of bets and that, like there's heaps of guys be like, I'm not like a sports better myself, but I just come for the vibes of the potty. But that's me. Like that's what you want as well, because it's like a cool little community you guys have now.
It is. It's really growing, eh? So obviously last week was the first week we all hit our bring a leg.
Yeah.
It's a different type of bet, but it's a pretty out there bet. But we all got it, and then just seeing everyone on the back of it.
Is it Zeke making your edits though?
Yeah, so he does all the edits.
He makes the crack up ones.
Him and this other guy do it, but bro, he's awesome, eh? So I'll never say it to him, but
sweet. We'll get stuck in now, bro. I'm just gonna wind the clock right back like I normally do, bro. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up out in Papatoetoe. I spent most of my life there. I grew up in Rewa, then I moved out to Pap, and that's become my little my home. So yeah.
Awesome. And like growing up in Pap, did you like Pap South, Pap East?
I didn't do. I did the intermediate primary school in Weymouth.
Yeah.
And then by the time I moved to Pap, I was in high school. So that's when I went to Papatoetoe High School, and I did my hard knocks over there. So
Did you play for the club as well, Papatoetoe Rugby Club, when you were younger?
Nah, no, I played for Weymouth. I was a leaguey.
Oh, true.
So I was a leaguey. Once I got to Pepetoi, I started playing league.
Yeah.
I played league for 3-4 years. The only reason why I went back to rugby is the Pepetoi High School team were saying that they were going to go to South Africa for a school trip. So I jumped on the back of there and I was like, oh, mate, give me a flight out of New Zealand. I'll be keen as.
Oh, bro.
We didn't actually get to go to South Africa for whatever reason, but we got to go to Rarotonga. So
cool.
I was pretty stoked on it. Yeah.
Oh, bro, me and that, that's the bro Louis over there. We were both in school and we played on the team together. And 1 year we got back to school in Jan and they were like, oh, sweet. So we're playing a South Africa trip. So we're all like hissing, eh? And then because we didn't know much about the South Africa comp. And then then they're like, oh, sweet. So we're going to play teams like Paul Roos. I forgot some of our Grey College. And then we're like, oh, sweet. So we searched them up on YouTube and we're like, oh, no, we don't want to go anymore.
Those are big schools, eh?
Those schools are unreal. Your family dynamic, bro. You got siblings growing up. Like, what was your, how big is your family? Or where's your family?
Yeah, I've got an older sister, 2 younger brothers, and a younger cousin, but she's pretty much like a sister. She grew up with us.
Nice.
It's pretty like a normal family, bro. Like tough times when you're young, you don't know. It's tough
times.
We grew up around a lot of family, so our family house was the main hub. So we get used to having all the cousins over, all sleeping over, and
going out every Sunday.
So that was our vibe growing up. You appreciate it, especially when you go to France. It's a very different dynamic over there. Like, obviously, us poly boys all get together. We kind of try and create that same kind of environment.
Mm.
But in France, it's very different. So,
But
you always get the French boys come in, and they just say it's awesome to see this type of
connections
and stuff like that. So, it's been
good. Yeah, my brother-in-law, he went over to Italy, and he was playing for, what was that club called again, Tara? Sorry, I forgot what this club was called. Anyway, he was over there and he was in Venice. And anyway, like the first night he got there, straight away linked up with one of the Samoan and Tongan dudes there. They had a cover session the first night he got there. We're straight off the plane, straight into a cover session.
Oh, man, it's awesome to see Kiwis.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who it is. Like, you hear that accent, you're like, hey, you're Kiwi.
Yeah.
Okay, come have lunch with us. And they become family. Like, it's just the way it is. That's how we Kiwis are, eh? So,
Sports, bro. Does your family and yourself, did you always play sports? Like, obviously, you said you played league. What about all your other family? Were they all sports orientated as well?
Yeah, we all played rugby or league. Yeah, those are two kind of sports that we're good at. So, that's the way we kind of went. So, obviously, it was me and my cousin. We were the oldest ones. And then, obviously, the younger cousins kind of just follow suit. So,
And so did you guys have, like, were you always growing up, like, and then playing league, were you always like one of the like front runners? Were you always in the what position were you playing for?
No, I was
league?
Playing prop, yeah.
Oh, true.
No, I wasn't. I would say my cousin was. He was the guy that was always making teams, but he was like someone I always looked up to, so I just kind of followed. And I wasn't the most talented dude, but I would always turn up. I'd always be there. Like, I'd walk from Pep. You know where Puinui Station is?
Yeah.
You walk from Puinui Station to Pep High School, and then from Pep High School, I'd walk to Ngāti Otara.
What?
And then from Ngāti Otara, I'd walk home after training. Because I just wanted to be around my cousin, and that whatever team he went to, I went with. And then, but in the time, I didn't know, like, when I look back now, I was like, bro, I would never let my kid walk from there to there. But it was just, I just wanted to be in the team. So,
yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Just even the physical feat of walking that whole thing.
It was like, after training, we'll train like 5 till 7, and then I was walking home, in the hotel all the way through.
That's unreal. So, like, balancing that at a young age, bro. So, you obviously had your schoolwork, playing, and you said you were making all the teams, but you're obviously still giving it a crack with. Committing to walking that distance and then trying to get to those trainings. Did you struggle to like balance all that young, or was that just what you wanted to do?
Yeah, at the time, I think, man, I just wanted to be around my mates. And obviously that my cousin, that was another part I wanted to be a part of. And I'm a person like if that's what I want to do, I'm in, like I'm fully committed to it. And yeah, like school was important as well. I just kind of made it work. Like whatever way it went, that's just the way, you know.
No, awesome. Do you have any like challenges you remember coming through the grades, like from either primary school, intermediate, or high school? Do you remember any specific challenges that you faced that you kind of learned off?
Yeah, probably just not making teams.
Yeah.
I remember because I was at Papatoa High School on my last year, I made it to the Auckland B team, but I got cut on the last one.
Oh, yeah.
And I reckon, I know the guy that cut me too, because obviously when you come up through the rugby systems, you get to know all the coaches that are doing all of that stuff. And he was just saying to me, oh, we just didn't think you were like, just coming from a B grade school, we didn't think you were ready or wanted it or kind of, from that, because then the rest of the boys all come from A grade schools and they were all like at King's, St. Peter's, and they're probably the starters for their teams, but just me coming from a different background, he just didn't believe. And I was like, at the time, I was like, yeah, no, that's sweet. And that's kind of how it eventuated. Like after that, I always say to the like kids or whoever asks, the hardest part about rugby, trying to make it professionally, is coming out of school.
Right.
Once you come out of school and you're in a system, obviously school, you're in a system, everything's catered to you.
Yeah.
You got programs.
Yeah.
You just get told what to do. You're pretty much like a professional environment. Once you come out, then you're on your own. Like, you got to go club rugby. They didn't really care about you.
Yeah.
Like, you just got to turn up Tuesday, Thursday, 6 p.m., and you'll come out of a system where you're doing Tuesday, Thursday mornings, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday trainings. And you got like the book, your booklet of like game plans to playing club rugby from a guy that's just doing it for, you know, for a bit of fun. Whereas in schoolboy rugby, you got coaches that are like ex-All Blacks or been in environments that are professional environments.
Yeah.
And then coming out, obviously, is like alcohol, girls. you know, like, because it was exactly the same, because when I come out, I kept playing. Because I just wanted to play with my boys.
Yeah.
But when I ended up playing, Papatoa is not a very good team, but I ended up playing for the Prems. I just went straight to the Prems. And I just kept playing. But when I was playing, I one by one, all the other guys just stopped playing.
Dropping off.
Just started dropping off. And I wasn't in the systems because I didn't go to academy. I wasn't in the academy, but I kept playing. And I was lucky enough. So I played the first year at school, I played Pep. The second year I went to Otahuhu because they were, back then there was two divisions.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, I'll give it one crack because I just wanted to play. And I said, I'll give it one crack. I'll go to Otahuhu, play there. And there was lucky there was a couple of guys in the academy in that team.
Mm.
So when the academy coaches come to watch them.
They got you as well.
They got to see me. They invited me to a scrum academy, which was only one day a week. And then I just kept turning up. Same thing, bro. I just kept turning up to training. Every Monday after work, I was a builder, so I was doing my apprenticeship. So every day after work, I just rock up tired as, but I'll just go and do the sessions. Plus, because I was number eight, I played number eight, and I was playing prop, but I wanted to learn how to scrum better.
Yeah.
So I turned up because I like to learn. And by one, all those guys were kind of there, and then they all weren't consistent, but I was the only one that was turning up. So I think they just... I was the last resort, really.
That's a crazy story. Yeah. It's probably more that the consistency that the coaches loved as well. Because I think what players, because that story resonates with me out. Because when I came straight out of school, one of my biggest challenges, and it's like weird to say, but like, because we both went to Kings, and like when I got to academy after, and I looked inside the gym, like, you know, you're kind of expecting something, and I walked and I was like, this is way worse than our school gym.
Yeah,
and then you think about the system and you're like, at school, everything, or like you said, you just have to turn up.
Yeah,
and then now to go to uni, and then to go to training, and then like Contenders would start. I have to go to Auckland Contenders and then go to club. And then like the club spectrum just kind of threw everything off the cards, because like you turn up and there's a guy that comes like half pissed, and then there's a guy you're coming and you're trying to make something of yourself, and then you just get like into this whole thing of confusion. Like, bro, the spectrum's just crazy for, like, that ref environment. Yeah, so I think what you did is probably exactly what everyone should do. Just turn up, like, every time, just turn up.
Yeah, just keep turning up, bro. Got to get turn up, and you got to, like, obviously, when you're learning new things, you got to take it in and then show it in the weekend. Like, and it's a tough time for, like, 18, 19-year-old boys trying to come out, and everyone wants to go out and go to parties and all that kind of stuff, but it's... And that certain time, you just got a little bit of sacrifice to If that's what it is, you want to be a professional player, then some guys just rock straight in and they're superstars straight off the bat. But other guys, it's not quite the same. Eh?
Yeah, bro, that's awesome though. So if we run through that, like, but you literally, well, Bees is technically like, yeah, Bees is a, you just missed out on Bees, but Bees still counts as a rep team. What was kind of like the first rep team outside of Prems that you played then from Otahu?
Oh, I went straight into the Auckland 20s.
Oh, cool.
So from there, because I was like a Prem player and I was just playing with under like all the boys that are under 21s.
Yeah.
But they just seen me playing with men. They were like, oh, come down and try it out. And then I made the team. And then from there, just it happened real quick. Hey? Like I was in the academy maybe 6 months and then I was playing ITM. I was out of school for 2 years, 18, 19, and then I was straight into the academy, bang.
At prop?
Prop. So I went academy for the last part of the year. The next year was the 20s, under 21s. So back then it was under 21s. We didn't have a camp, or we didn't have a tournament. We just had a camp and we played against the Canada men team. Men's team. We lost by 1 point, but it was just good to be a part of these environments. And then from there I went to ITM and then from there I went to Super. With a matter of 2 years, I was a builder, apprentice. Signed up for 2-3 year contracts and stuff like that.
That's crazy. The thing that I'm also buzzing out at is no matter what era, like scrums are a tough technique. So like if you were doing scrum sessions because you were playing eight, and when did you switch from eight to prop?
Once I went to Prems.
Holy moly. So that's still like if you think about it, that's still only 2 years of experience with trying to learn how to scrum and figure out way out of scrums. And considering you're known for having a strong scrum and being one of the best scrummers in the world, far out, bro. Like,
I don't know about that, eh? But once I got into a system, then New Zealand rugby kind of took over as well.
Yeah.
Like, it was funny, man, because like when I started coming through, there was no front rows. There was like a SOS call out to get more and more front rows. So we had like, it was me, Sekope Kepu, you know, the Aussie
fighter. Aussie,
when he was here, Sekope Kepu, Owen Franks, Dane Coles, there was probably another about six guys.
Yeah.
Us six guys will get flown all over New Zealand. Us 10 guys will get flown all over New Zealand to have scrum sessions with Mike Cron. They'll have it in Auckland, we'll all fly in. We'll have it in Christchurch, we'll all fly in. Like it was maybe quarterly. Would have sessions because there was an SOS and the next bunch of boys wasn't there, so they were trying to create like
get you guys up to scratch, eh?
Get us up to scratch.
Where's Mike Cron now? Is he Blues, eh?
No, he's Australia, bro.
Oh, yeah. So far, I wonder who are the props?
Oh, Greg Feek is the one that was in the ABs, is at the Blues now.
Oh, yeah. Far out. So, did those scrum things really help you like going into
I think so, yeah. Because then, like, all those guys all became internationals.
Yeah.
Right, the majority of them all became super, but then the majority became internationals.
Into the next grade, eh? At that time, like, in that growth phase, it obviously was super quick for you. What was, like, one challenge you faced at that time of, like, you went from, you know, playing Prems, all of a sudden 2 years later you're playing super and, you know, ITM at the time. What was it like for you?
I think at the time I was just on like cloud nine. Eh? Yeah. I was just like enjoying the ride, but I wasn't thinking ahead. I wasn't thinking like I want to be the best tight head in the world. I wasn't thinking like that. I was just like, man, this is me getting paid some money to play a game that I played for free every Saturday. Like, but yeah, just and it took me a couple 3 years. I started in 2008, 2009.
Yeah,
and it took me about 3 years to realize, I can do it. I can make this. I can make a living out of this.
Yeah.
This can be a long term thing.
Yeah.
And it was. It was probably just that. Like I was just cruising, taking it for granted. The journey.
Yeah.
And I had to meet with a few people. They were like, "Man, you can be an awesome player, but you're just like the potential that you have." Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And then from there, kind of clicked on. And then,
yeah. Because at the time you were so young, bro, and like, and it all happened so fast. Did you have a player agent at the time, swoop you up and help you out with all like the legalities around contracts, etc.?
By the time I got in there, by the time I had Super Rugby, I had an agent. Yeah. It was an agent that kind of was just the go-to guy. Like yeah. everyone was with him. I ended up changing maybe 2 or 3 years down the line. It wasn't like a bad thing, but it was just, I just wanted something different.
Yeah, so. Of course. Going through those stages, bro, and obviously you start picking up your career, at what point did it hit you that, like, all right, now I'm here, it's time to become, you know, one of the best tight heads in the world, as opposed to just kind of, you know, being on cloud nine and, you know, sitting in the moment?
Yeah, it was probably 2010, like after 2 years in the system. I went back, funny little setback. It wasn't funny at the time, but I was playing like Super Rugby for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I went back to ITM and I played, there was a new coach there and he just didn't like the way I played.
Mm.
And then I went there, I was playing for the Auckland B team like for like the whole season. I played maybe the first game and then he goes, oh, we didn't like the way, oh, you know, he just didn't like the way I played. And I was like, all right. And then I ended up playing for Auckland Bees the whole year. So I was just on a bus up and down the North Island playing Auckland Bees. And obviously Pat Lamb was a Super Rugby coach. And I was probably, to be fair, bro, I was in a bad place. Like, I was like, nah, this guy is all, he's all shit. I'm the man.
Yeah.
He's wrong, right. And it wasn't until a couple of guys that that were with me from the start, coaching-wise, came in and just to check up on me and to see where I was, and they're like, mate, there's nothing you can control.
Yep.
All of that stuff that's out of your control. What you can control is how you turn up, like the attitude you bring and the effort you bring. And then that was probably like another month left in the season, and then came to the last month. Pat Lamb probably came in like 3 weeks to go.
Mm.
He goes, mate, I just need to see you play one game, and then you perform, I'll sign you up straight away. Last game of the season come out, and I wasn't in the initial team, but someone got injured, and then I got in and I started, and that was my one game, and I had a
blinder.
Yeah, had an awesome game, bro. Had scored a couple of tries, and then got a contract, another 2-3 contract. But from that point, then I was like, oh, man, I can't take it for granted.
Yeah,
I got a
yeah.
Whether it is, like, whether it's the coach or not, I have to be adaptable and change my game to suit him or his game plan and not just think it's all about me and that I'm the man and whatnot. So, a few little setbacks in the season, but, it was good to see how it, like, overall the journey.
You turned it around.
Yeah, you turned it around.
But it's interesting, like, that kind of also sits on that saying, like, we, you know, whenever someone doesn't make a team, it's a cliche saying, but it is accurate that it's always like one man's opinion, whether you make a team or not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether it's depending on what it's you get that information and, you know, you might say like, oh, look, you didn't make the squad. The guys that always make it are the ones that kind of use that not essentially as fuel, but, you know, as a trigger to work on something more or, you know, just keep going, keep ticking it over.
Yeah, it is because, like, I like to think that I play a lot more like, expansively, like I played like the offload game.
Yeah,
use the feet kind of work. The guy that came in, he liked the pick and go game, the malls, the real old school kind of play. But like both are important. But and that's what I came the next year come around. Then I had to learn that game as well. And it just gives you more tools in your game.
Mm.
Like, and that's probably the way I had to look at it. It's like, his way is not bad. It's just different, and I just had to accept it and adapt. You know?
Mm. Post that, you've obviously started building just brick by brick. Your career starts kind of growing and growing. What ended up being like a? Did you have like a key routine that you would stick to every day, other than obviously your team trainings? Did you have like a set routine, or was it freestyle for you?
In regards to training,
yeah, like training and food and diet and
yeah, yeah. It probably was a bit like freestyle. There wasn't anything that I would do too far out of the norm. I'll just like try to get the training early, just get the body going. I definitely did it towards the end of my career in France. So I was in France, they got like in France, it's crazy. Like there's money for days. Like the soccer guys got facilities for days, and so does rugby. Like you got ice bath, hot baths, saunas, swimming pools inside your facilities. And by the end of my career, I was in that hot bath every morning.
Oh, real?
Trying to get ready for the day. So, man, when you're young and you're keen in the, at the Blues, I'd just rock up and I'd be there early enough, but I'll just rock up and just get into it.
Yeah. Do you remember, like, so what were those years? What kind of years are we talking for, like, your first 2 years of Blues?
Yeah, 08, 09.
08, 09.
Yeah,
do you remember, like, a preseason that was just like, oh, nah.
Oh, bro, all of them, man. I was always the big boy, so I'm always at the back of the pack. But, probably the ones that we went to an army camp. We went to an army camp in, out in Papakura. And I think we went to every single hill in Auckland. And we did a thing, like whether it was pushing up vans or taking logs up Panmure or going up One Tree Hill with jerry cans. It was like a couple of hills in the Cleveland there, I think. What's the staircase called out there?
Oh, yeah. I think we did it. Yes, Slater. Yeah, that's right.
I think we did that one. And we finished at Mount Eden. We did that was one of our last hills that we did with. I think we just ran up that one. We were, by the time we were rutted. But we got to see over Mount Eden Park, and he was like, that's your fortress, that's your. That's your home.
I wonder if who was your SNC coach at the time?
Halves. I don't know. I wouldn't even know his first name, but he was from the Navy.
Oh, so, true. So that's kind of the style, eh?
It was either that or in out in Devonport in the mud dunes or something.
Oh yeah.
We're just trying to go through that.
Yeah, I think the Blues still do that nowadays. I saw that on their socials last year actually. Do you remember any of your numbers, bro, from like the early days of like when your body started filling out and you started, you know, putting on the muscle post school and stuff?
Oh,
like,
bro, I wasn't. I was going the other way, bro. I was trying to get down.
Oh, is that what? Yeah.
So I was always like, I was probably by the time I got to academy, I was probably at 140, 50.
Yeah,
and then I had to try to get down to 130.
Oh, that's a fair chunk, though.
Yeah, and I was just on the bike, bro. Biking up Mount Eden. So like that was just the transition. Like that was, you know, I've never been in the weight room because I was always just trying to get smaller. I was just trying to maintain. And like if I start doing weights, then I start putting on weight again. Mm. And they were like, "Bro, you're like I'm big enough and I know how to use my body that I didn't always have to be in the gym."
Mm.
So I was just always on the cardio. They're just like, "Nah, man, you're done."
Your Blues days. Do you remember your debut vividly?
Yeah.
What was it? You want to talk to us about that day? Like your feelings, who you're playing, and
For the Blues, it wasn't. I was playing against the Sharks. I was playing the Sharks
here at, or
Eden Park.
Oh,
yeah.
True.
It was just a real feeling. It goes real fast because you're so nervous. You're like have that. You don't want to mess up.
Yeah.
You don't want to let the team down.
Yeah.
So. The whole time I was just in that mode. And then after it, when the game finished, it was just like, oh, I played my first game. That was awesome.
Yeah.
All that kind of hard, all the hard work that you've done kind of come to fruition. So, stoked as to have that first game. But, yeah.
Going on from Blues, bro, like you feel there's everyone always talks about it, like the amount of games you played for the Blues. You finish on 99. That's your number. Was there any reason you didn't go to the Century at the time?
Oh, no. I guess it was just timing, bro. Like, there was a game they kind of – I was a little bit sick, and they said, I will save you for that game.
Yeah.
In hindsight, like, I could have went and played it and been fine and got the 100. But, man, I had plenty of time to get 100. I was just always broken or injured or something. Yeah,
but too, like I'm talking like 99 games, isn't it? That's like, bro, that's crazy. Especially because at the time, you're talking 99 games of traveling South Africa, here. It's not like Super Rugby Pacific now where, you know, it's kind of Australasian based.
Yeah.
And like that, that's a lot of travel.
It was an awesome, I enjoyed that time, that South Africa trip. And obviously, on the back of that, sometimes you go into Australia, so you go for 2 week Australian trips.
Mm.
And that's an awesome experience going. Obviously, you guys are. Did you guys go to South Africa?
No, we did our big, so 2020, we were supposed to go play all of them, and we were like, no, we don't want to go, like, but, like, we obviously did want to go, just, we just didn't want to play Paul Roos and that, but, and then all of a sudden, COVID hit, and then we were like, oh, so, yeah, we couldn't, we didn't end up going because of COVID, yeah, but, yeah, I do kind of wish in the end we, did go, but, I'm sure they probably would have put, like, 100 points on us, if we look at some of the things where we go in your Blues career, you obviously played with some, you know, some big players at the time. You filtered through a few different coaches as well, but who were some key players that you loved playing with in your Blues kind of venture?
Oh, I'll be just John Kano, like Kim Malamu, Tony Woodcock. Oh, there'll be heaps, bro. Even old Rennie Ranger. Like, I come through the same time as Rennie Ranger, and as much as he's you're one of your best mates and stuff, eh? But just some games you just like shake your head at their follower. But some games you'll be like, he'll make something out of nothing. And it's just
Did you have Afro Rennie Ranger?
I was before from the get go, eh? So I think he made it the year before, but he was just in water, and then we made it the same year as pros, like,
yeah,
proper. There'll be heaps, man, like. There was a lot of guys that had come through the same time, like Chris Larry, TV to my level, but they probably only played maybe 4 or 5 years, and then they all shot off. By the end of it, I was like the old fella. Like, once all Kivy and them all left, I was the old fella for like 3 or 4 years. And there wasn't many other guys around. Then Jerome Kiner, it was just me and Jake Lombs.
Yeah. So,
probably Lombs, because after Blues, we went to France together.
Yeah.
I went to France, and then he come to the same club.
Yeah. So, is he still there playing, bro?
Nah, he's coaching.
Coaching now, right. Oh, true. Back at that Blues time, like with the young players coming up, and then, when you said Rennie Ranger, I just laughed because every time I hear Rennie Ranger's name, that clip of the James O'Connor.
Yeah, the
bump off. Right, I can't get that out of my head every time you hear Rennie Ranger. When you started progressing through and then those young players start coming through, what was it like to kind of like have little mentees? Because you obviously would have ended up being a mentor for like the young props coming through. What was it like kind of just growing and end up being a leader in the team?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's I think it's just like it was what was passed on to me is like it was my responsibility to pass on.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a very Kiwi thing to do. Like, yeah. They just, like, a lot of guys looked after me. Whether it was, like, when I was coming through, I didn't have a boot sponsor. And then the big boys would be like, what size are you? Boom, the next day I would have, like, my boots, two or three pair of boots next to my locker. And they're like, those are yours. And then they wouldn't even, like, oh, do I have to pay you? Because, nah, sweet ass. And then I would do the same for the next boys that coming through because those guys did it before, like, did it for me.
Mm.
And then I was like, it was just, like, and the same with, like, experience and scrumming and whatever, like a lot of the boys that did come through, you just try to help them to, I mean, you're helping them because you want to win on the weekend, like, as much as you're helping them to be better. Like, we're all just trying to get a result on the weekend. So, you know, is that saying that everyone, you're only as strong as your weakest? Like, we're just trying to make everyone better so the gap is a lot more closer.
Mm. You're not being a leader at the Blues. You obviously have some gun seasons with the Blues. 2012 was when you get a call to take a step up. Do you remember when you got a call for the first time or when you had your first chat to kind of know that you're about to end up in the All Black space?
Oh, man, I had a chat with them before, like even before 2011, that I was just on the radar. And they were looking. And, like, it was cool. Like, it was always it was scary as, like, one of the first meetings I went into, and like it was a little room, like it's probably very similar to this room, and there's just a long table, round table, and you had all the big dogs. We had Graham Henry, Steve Hansen, Grant Fox, all the coaches plus your Blues coaches, and I'm like, bro, this is just like just a little island boy, and then all of these guys. But bro, that's what I loved about that team. Some of the coaches, like, bro, this is just like, I'm a big cards player. I love playing, you know, like all the rummy and
yeah.
Most of the time, it's always me that kind of starts it, and then everyone just jumps on it. So they must have found out, because obviously, as coaches do, they kind of dig and try to find what makes people tick.
Yeah.
It's MMA, like, mate, it's just like another card game. We're just your mates. We just want to see or hear what you want to say, or like what I had to say, or and just give me feedback on my game. So from that point on, like, I got the call up in 2012. It was funny because it wasn't funny, but last game before the June test, I tore my calf.
Oy.
So I missed the June test, but they still wanted me to go to camp. And all the boys were giving me shit because, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all good.
Because no one comes to these camps. Like, if you're injured, you don't come to the camps.
Oh, but
like,
you had to, you, but they still wanted you to
be in the camp. And they're like, bro, no one ever does this, only you, because Mike Cron is just like, that's your dad. Like, he's just like, always looking out for me. And he was, bro, like, he was a massive part of my rugby career. But at the time, I was like, nah, these guys are just having me on. But as you played and as you did, like, no one comes in, like, but because I think they just wanted me in the environment, because I missed out because of my calf, they just wanted me to be there. So when that comes to the championship, the next intake, that I'm ready to go. Like, I'm not behind trying to learn things. I'm already there, like, learning the line-out calls and learning the systems that they just wanted me there to be ready. So,
Did you feel the mental and, like, physical jump just being around the arena and being around the squad and the coaches and how they play?
Yeah, it's intense, eh? Like, intense in a good way. And it's like expectation. It's just there's an expectation to that this team wins, like, and it's not like on Saturday. Obviously, it's on Saturday that it wins, but a lot of the standards and all that kind of stuff that helps you get those wins is from the Monday to the before the game, up to the game, and that's where the standards of the gym, how you turn up, how you prepare,
it's like everything,
man, like. And it's like, it was a good learning curve just to be, like, a better person too. Like, how, like, just seeing all these, like, the best guys in the world, how they do it. And it's kind of opened your eyes, because I was only a Blues and I only see the Blues guys do it the way they do it. And that was, like, they were good too. But then you see the, like, the Canterbury boys do it the way the Chiefs boys do it. And it's like, you just take little bits, however one, which one you wanted, you just take whatever. But it was awesome to see just how much more professional we had to be.
So. Yeah. Going forward from there, like, from that point where you get there, on the Mandate podcast, you see something that kind of stuck with me, and it's like, you know, you're not an All Black until you cross that white line. Obviously, that opportunity ends up coming for you. That moment where you're kind of in the changing room before, do you remember what you're feeling? Do you remember how nervous you were on your first cap?
I wasn't so much nervous. I don't think I'm not a very nervous type of guy.
Oh, yeah.
I just kind of, everyone always buzzes out how I prepare for a game, and it's, I'll just sit there on my phone just playing games. I'd play chess, or I'll play whatever games my kids download, and I'll just play it.
Yeah.
I love, like, when I don't think about the game. Like, all the thinking for the game in regards to preparation has to be done before that. And, like, if I start thinking about the game before the game, like, in those change room, then it, for me, doubt starts to creep in. We go, oh, crap, did I, you know, when you go over holiday and you forget something, you're like, hey, did I forget this? And then, like, I'm the same when it comes to the prep. So from an early age, I try to get it out from Monday to Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday when I'm in the change room, I just on my phone and I just watch the boys do prep. And I can't. You see the guys running up and down doing their shuttles. I don't have that much energy. I have a set time, so I have a routine too, but my routine's only like 10 minutes, so by the time I get out there, I just got a 10-minute little window, and then I'm into the team training, and it just goes back to back, where some guys we're there maybe 40 minutes before the game, they're straight into it, and it's, everyone's different, it's their own preparation, you never judge them. I just giggle every now and then when I see some of the guys, but I just, from an early age, I just never... got nervous. One game I did get nervous was the final for the World Cup, and that was probably the only
2015.
Yeah, bro, I was so scared. Eh? Like, just say it's like it just this is everything we kind of worked towards, and it was all on the line now. And that was probably one game I was, and it wasn't like the change room. It was just before I got on. I was like, this is it. If I mess up or I lose a scrum or that kind of stuff. But once I got into it and I got the hands on my ball or made a tackle, then it just kind of disappeared and just got onto
your work. Bro, well, let's go there then. Like, the 2015 World Cup, you know, you've got all eyes on you, the world's watching, the whole of New Zealand's watching, pretty much all of Samoa will be watching as well. Because like obviously like half their team felt like was Samoa in 2015. what was it like in my head when I think about it, I'm like, oh, the best way to do it would just be get stuck in as fast as you can, get a moment as fast as you can. What was kind of your thinking process before the final? Were you just trying to keep it as basic as you could?
Oh, nah, yeah. We spent so much time in the ABs and we spent a lot of time on like the mental side of the game, like how, what we do in certain scenarios, how we feel in certain scenarios. And there's like a lot of, there's just been a lot of work in the ABs on that side, because I think that going off the back of 07, 03, both World Cups, we All Blacks have been the favourite. Yeah, 07, 03, the last two, and we always seem to fall out somewhere.
Short,
So from, I think, 04, when Graham Henry and them started to take over, they started to instill that stuff.
So was Gilbert Onoka in there as well?
He was part of it. And from there, bro, it was, because it's not really, like when you're young, you can't rely, like if you're a big ball carrier, you can't rely that in the first minute, second minute, that you're going to get your hands on the ball.
Yeah.
You can't even say like in 10 minutes you're going to get your hands on the ball, because it's hard, because there's three, if you're running your pods, there's three guys.
Yeah.
And if you're not the guy that gets up first, or you're not in position first, you're going to miss it.
Mm.
And if you're going to miss the opportunity to get into a game for 10 minutes, that's 10 minutes wasted. Like.
True.
And that's the, like, that's how I used to, because I was a big ball carrier. I was like, and then like with those guys, that's how they explained it to me. So you're like, you got to get more tools in your thing. So it's either going to be a clean out, a tackle, whatever it is. And you got to get that energy that you get from when you carry a ball from those instances. Yeah. So whatever it was, like, even if it was just talking, hey, move, push, that got you into the game, because it just turned you on or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, did it feel like, was it like loud, like in regards to like the crowd, or does it feel quiet when you're on, in the...
Nah, it feels quiet.
Far out.
You can just hear, like, you know, you're very familiar with your mates' voices, that you can only hear that. And those, like, when you see the pictures on attack or defense, you're like, you're just listening out for their voices and all our calls. You're just listening out for that stuff.
Mm.
Like some games, man, you play Argentina and Buenos Aires, and you just stadium. The stadium's just jumping.
Yeah.
Like you're looking up, like, and they got fireworks in there. You're like, how the hell? But most games, it is they're all chanting, but you can only just hear your mates.
Yeah. So 2015, that final was Australia.
Yeah, it was Australia.
Who was the front row that you had to scrum against for that one?
I think it was up against James Slipper.
Oh, cool. Far out. He's
been around a while, and the scrum started going down, I think, and then and it was probably my side. It was probably me, but by the time the ref come over to my side, it went down again, but he gave me the penalty.
Oh, yeah.
He gave us the penalty, and then like from there, I was like, oh, no. And then from then, the boys started playing Bowden Barrett.
Bodie starts kicking it through and chasing with Ben Smithy.
And it was probably the semi-final was probably the harder one, but the Australia one, it was the pressure that we just kind of put on ourselves, because it was the final.
Mm.
And
And also because it would have been the first back-to-back.
From
11 to 15. So there's probably that little bit of added pressure for you guys as well. I mean, I assume the coaches probably didn't talk about back-to-back, but I think in the back of your minds, you probably would have
thought about it. Yeah, I think so, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that would have been cool. What did it mean to you, bro, in the end, to be in All Black? You know, you established 50 caps and you're an established All Black. What does it mean to you now when you think about it?
I don't think it's, I don't think too much about it. Like, it was a journey, a big part of my life before. As a rugby player, obviously now as retired and transitioning into the next part of life, and I don't really look too much back to it. Eh? It was awesome ride, and I love the relationships that I had in those in that journey.
Mm.
But it's a very different space now, like, because you're not around that team environment, that camaraderie. You're kind of on your own, trying to find your own path again. But yeah, always keen for when the boys say, oh, let's catch up for a coffee. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Because you just want that kind of camaraderie feel and be a part of a team. So,
Thanks for sharing that, bro. Well, I'm going to touch on the post footy stuff, All Blacks, like Samoa and Toulouse, because that's pretty much half of the fan questions are talking about that. So I'm just going to skip straight into post footy, bro. When was your actual last game? Like, when did you actually lace the boots up, date wise?
It was in the World Cup.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't supposed to be, but it was in the World Cup against Argentina.
Second game in.
Yeah, I got injured after that.
And
I got ruled out for the last two, but they just kept me around, leadership wise or whatever it was. And just in case if someone else went down, then I could just get the jab or the
cortisone injection.
And just strap it up and go. No one went down and then it was fine. That was probably my last game. I was going to go to the US because I wanted to go travel around the US and play for New York. And then I was going to retire after that, but New York didn't eventuate. It kind of, the guy that owned the club didn't want to spend any more money and he just shut it down.
So
I think it was like me, Aaron Cruden, Melanin and I, they were all going to go there in that year. But it didn't work out. So
you end up going there. What about your actual last game of rugby that you ever played? That's for Toulouse, is it?
That would have been for Toulouse. In the final, bro. It was in the final against La Rochelle, so another big French club. We won. It was tough, man. Like we were losing for the majority of the game, and obviously I play at Toulouse, so I play with Antoine Dupont and all the Romain Intermac and Ramos. One of the boys, that La Rochelle boys, shot out the line and Romain Intermac dummied and went through. Maybe like 4 minutes to go, scored a try to take us in front. And there's a, have you ever seen these meme out there, the rock, paper, scissors meme? And like say, because we always play Leinster, so Leinster is pretty much the
Tigers.
Is
that the Leinster one that Barrett's at? Jordan's at now.
He's at the Leinster team, and the Leinster team is pretty much the whole Ireland team. Toulouse and La Rochelle are the French teams.
Yeah,
the majority come from those two teams, or majority comes from us at Toulouse. But when we play Leinster, we always lose. When Leinster plays La Rochelle, they always lose. And when La Rochelle plays us, La Rochelle always loses. So we've played La Rochelle maybe 3 times in the final, but we beat them all the time. Sure. But when we play Leinster at the semis or something, we lose. The styles against each other just seem to work or not work. That was my last game. And I hadn't played the majority of the season. I had a bad calf and I just kept coming back in it and I'll keep doing my calf.
Mm.
But the coach was like, I was there from the start with the Toulouse team, and he just wanted me to send me out on one game.
Mm.
He goes, bro, I just need you to play just one game. But I just played the final. I came off the bench in the final. He goes, he didn't care. He just wanted to give me one more moment to play again.
Bro, that's insane.
I played the game and we won. And then
those French crowds are different, eh, bro?
Oh, it's crazy, man.
How big is the stadium, your home stadium?
Our one is 20,000.
Yeah.
We'll fill that out every weekend.
It's 20,000, but it probably sounds like 50.
But if we had a big game, we would take it to the soccer stadium. And that's 40,000. We would fill that out as well. It didn't matter where we would take it. We would fill it out. And we would go to the French. The French final is always at Stade de France, so it's in Paris.
Yeah.
That's 80,000. They fill that out every... I think we fill that out every week, bro. Toulouse is like crazy because obviously Toulouse is like the Crusaders. They've got all the titles.
Mm.
They've won the most, and no matter where we go, like we'll go to Paris and play Racing Metro, which is the Paris team. Well, for the most, the crowd will be all black and red. They'll be Toulouse. So they just got a rich history, and they always back their team, and they always follow the team. So
yeah, because, you know, like here, like you could live in Auckland, but like support the Crusaders or something. And in France, is it like real locally driven? Like if you stay around the Toulouse area, you're definitely just straight.
Toulouse, yeah. Like if you're Toulouse, if you're born and bred Toulouse, you're Toulouse.
Yeah.
No matter where you live and like you're Toulouse.
Yeah.
So that's what we're saying. When we go to games away, like there's a big following of Toulouse supporters.
Me.
So, obviously, when your team's winning, they always want to come out and support. So,
So you come back, bro. Like post a career, obviously, tick off some amazing. Like honestly, that's pretty crazy. You go, you obviously play for Samoa as well and things like that. Did you now that you've been back? Is it 2 years? 1 year?
Yeah, just over a just year. Over a year. About, 14 months, 15 months.
Yeah. Are there any challenges that you face? Because there is a narrative out there that you know they say like rugby players struggle for like the first 1 to 3 years post footy. Are there any challenges you've faced, or you've kind of eased it into it quite well, or settled in quite well?
No, I wouldn't say it's been easy. I think it's just that having that belonging to a team environment or a work environment that has that same culture as a team. I worked for maybe about 3 months, but I haven't been working. Like, I just chose not to to work. And, like, how my career's panned out, we've set us up financially, like, in regards to property and stuff, that's let us take our time in this space. But it is, like, for a guy that thought that I had it all sussed and coming back, and I think about the guys that don't have it and they come back, like, how they're forced to get into work straight away, and it's something that they don't want to do, but they have to because it's what they have to do to look after their family. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, it's a tough space. It's I just feel for our men or our boys or and the girls whoever. That we just got to prepare well, bro. We just got to be better placed and. Looking after our boys in transition periods.
So. Yeah, because it's definitely a big like spectrum, mate. Because you got to live out your career, and in a lot of ways, you'll probably be well fulfilled with the achievements you've got. But then some like they have to finish early because of like a severe injury or stuff. And so like when it comes to preparing, you probably haven't mentally, financially, physically, you know, probably haven't prepared for something like that. But that's cool to open and hear that, bro. Like that. You have a lot of hobbies, bro. You know, like post footy as well. One of the ones that I got told, and that you're really savvy, is investing, bro. Like, what brought that up for you? And you know, how did that all come up in your life? Being
bro, my old man had he had a couple of properties, and at the time I didn't know that's what he had. We would just be there cleaning up some of the rentals, and then come to, like, obviously, when you're 13, 14, no one wants to do that stuff. Like, you just want to go play with your mates. And but come to realize after how much he sold it for and how much he brought it for, kind of got me into that game. And then that's where I went to straight away with the money I kind of got with rugby. And I did it pretty much straight off the bat, like, just try to find a mentor and some guys to just help me push my money into places where it was where I could see it on the other end and put like, you know, set up the family in a better position. So everyone kind of knows me as the property guy now in the rugby circles. If they need a bit of advice, then I'm the kind of guy just having someone that's been on their journey and probably someone that looks like them that they'll rather listen to. So and just to give advice before they go and seek it professionally.
Yeah,
so.
Wow, that's awesome, bro. That's leadership, like, post-footy as well. And that's that sense of, I mean, you're right, like, you know, that when you said, you know, and a guy that looks like me, like, I think for especially a lot of the Pacifica that come, like, if they're still playing or even out, it's, like, a good direction to look at, especially in what we're talking about preparing for post-footy, bro. So, I love that, eh? Any future goals for you?
Oh, man, I'm in this business game now. I want to be obviously I'm just trying to buy businesses and like that's where we are now. But there's not a definite goal, but that acquisition phase, we're just trying to lock down some stuff and do that. But I'm decided to do a bit of coaching this year. I'm with Sacred Heart College, so doing their first 15, doing their forward, so... I always see myself trying to do some coaching, but obviously the business stuff outside, I have to get that sorted before I can fully try to give my all to like some other teams and like bigger teams. So, but this is a good stepping stone to get my feet My feet in there.
If you want, if you want to take some, I've got some like King's Skittles. You want to take it to Sacred Us? Just chuck it on them. I'm pretty sure that'll be pretty stoked to have the King's Kid around. The kids, bro. You reckon the kids are gonna? Do you want them all to play rugby, or are you just gonna let them?
Yeah, bro.
Just go and do what they want.
I'll do. Like it is an awesome journey, but it's like, man, you gotta. There's like, especially now where the game's going with social media and stuff. Like, if it's what you want to do, then you have to be prepared for the stuff that comes at you. And because I'm not real big on socials in regards to some of the other boys in my time, and just some of the stuff that they would get from them after some games. I don't know if I could have dealt with that, so that's probably why I stayed off it. But same for like our kids, if that's the journey they want to do, then man, do it. But it's not all
sunshine and rainbows,
There's sacrifices, there's distractions and all that kind of stuff. So
100%, bro. Thank you. We're gonna finish this up. I'm gonna get some of the fan questions up, bro. And then we'll finish up and we'll close out our potty today. Let's get these up. All right, starting from one of the first ones. Do you have here we go. The first one says, this is a guy named one of the boys, Kobe Schmoko, says, Manu Samoa being robbed against England in the World Cup, shaking my head.
Yeah, that was tough, eh, bro? It was on us as well, bro. Like, we should have closed that game out, but I think we're Moanas now, having that, obviously Samoa, obviously ABs, you got Super Rugby that feeds into the All Blacks, and the standard is very good, and it goes to All Blacks, it's not a big jump.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I think where Samoa was before was, like, guys were coming out of club rugby, playing second, third division in England or France, and then coming straight into international. Now where Moana's probably playing the way they are, that transition into Samoa is not going to be as big, and then we'll be able to play those big matches and keep them closer. But, yeah, in that World Cup, bro, that was just, that was tough to take.
What was it like playing for Saos? Like you know, different from, was it awesome?
Yeah, I loved it, eh?
Oh, mean.
The rugby side is the rugby side. Like, it's how it's run and all that kind of stuff. It's very, it's hard. But what I got from playing for Samoa, how much it meant emotionally, it was crazy. It was more than I could ever think that I would get from that jersey.
Nice.
And it was... you know when you watch, like, Argentina, Italy, and they cry, the way they hold the jersey, like, that's the way you feel when you play for Samoa.
That's awesome.
It's just different because it's where your mum and dad come from. Like, you have a connection back in it. It was probably, like, it's not a connection that I had. I would always go to Samoa, but I wouldn't, I was like, I would be a proud Samoan, but I didn't have that feeling like that. I don't think I would ever have a feeling the way that I played when I played for Samoa. There's no feeling that
Brother.
I didn't get that feeling when I played for the ABs. Yeah. It's because there's so much history
And just the connection, just
connection back. So when I watch when I see those RG boys or the
that's awesome. I got to go to the next question. Do you have a favorite Bible verse? That's just the next one by James Solomon.
Oh, bro, the iron sharpens iron, that one's probably my favorite one.
Another one from her, Tara, right there. looking back, what advice would you give to young players aspiring to reach where you've got to?
I just got to – probably just that it depends on where you are, but, like, if you're young, you just got to enjoy the game, just play because you want to be a part of your mates.
Mm.
I guess once you're in the system and stuff, then it's sacrifices and got to work. There's nothing that can get you anywhere near where you want to be. Oh, there's a quote that it's anything that you want to get to is on the other side of hard work. That's like one of the ones that I always kind of looked at. Like, okay, I gotta do this. A lot of times when I was young, the quote that I loved was that. Hard work beats talent when talent
doesn't work hard.
That was the one. Because 100%. Like, I was probably the talent.
Yeah.
And I just needed to work hard. Like, you can't just rely on talent. Talent isn't, especially like schoolboy rugby, there's a lot of talent.
Talent, there. Yeah.
But from there to there, it's
just a bit of work. Bro, 100%. Got a next question by your fellow All Black and Blues member, Harry Plummer. he said, your best investment story and worst one?
My best one. It's probably a property I brought early in my career too. It was passed on from another trader. I bought it for $350,000. I put 70K into it. After I finished it, it owed me like maybe 700K.
Oh, yeah.
But it, the thing that really was good about it is it bankrolled itself. It was paying its own. It was getting about 600 something a week for it, and it was paying for itself. Something like that. Because I cashed it. The loan on it was only 350, so
yeah.
The 660 paid for itself, and I didn't have to do it. Now that's on developable land. It's on a big section, and it's probably worth like maybe 1.2 mil, but it's I won't sell it. I'll develop it and put maybe 8 houses on it or something.
Yeah,
like
bro. Holy heck. You have a worst one?
Worst one?
Don't have to talk numbers, just like it, like, or whatever happened in the situation.
Nah, I don't have a worst one. Oh. The worst one, it's probably the worst one for my wife. I went to an auction thinking that my mate was going to buy the house. So we bought the house, and then he goes, "Bro, when do you want to send the money?" And I was like, "Hey, I thought it was you." And then he goes, "Nah, I thought it was you." And then, bro, I called my mortgage broker and, "Bro, can you make this happen? I just bought a house." I bought it. And he goes, "You know, he made it work." And he goes, "Yeah, sweet." We ended up flipping the house, but we just renovated, flicked it. But I had to go tell my wife when I went home, and I was like, "Oh, I just bought something." And he goes, "Oh, what'd you buy?" And he goes, "I just bought a house." And I was like, she was like, "What the hell?"
Oh,
but nah, she saw the funny side in it after when we sold it, but. Yeah, it's a tough old convo.
Next one, Harry Mortimer said, "Who was the toughest opponent to scrum against?"
I think scrummaging isn't like a person; it's always like a scrum. You play against the scrum, and it'll be the Crusaders, bro. Just 80 minutes, man. Those guys don't stop. Hey,
true.
You always get some big teams, like big scrummages, like Saffers, or but after a while, they just fade away. But the Crusaders, bro, they just
keep on it, eh?
Just keep on it.
Last one was by my also Cedric Tolsinger. Favorite Auckland club rugby memory?
Oh, it'll be first year of school. I'm just trying to think if there was another one. No, I just liked the first year of school. I played for Papatoa Rugby Club, and we were in a very good rugby club, but I loved the spirit inside the club and inside the club room. Like, everyone will stick around to have a beer or have a fizzy. And we would get pumped like 40 points, but they were in there every weekend.
Yeah.
Every, like, just having, like, sticking around for like maybe 2 or 3 beers and then they go. But having that camaraderie in that team built that spirit. And I always think back, like, that's my favorite rugby memories.
That's what it's about, eh?
Yeah, bro. That's what, like, that's what club rugby should be about, is not so much here to drink or anything, but to stick around and just share a moment. Because it's after you go to war with them, you want to sit back and go, oh, whether it's giving them a hard time, go, that missed tackle, that run was awesome, but you just reflect, and that's how you build those relationships. Yeah. So,
awesome, man. Far out. Like, thank you, eh? Like, thanks for the message. Thanks for sharing all that with us, bro. The people, everyone's going to love it, eh? And like, especially with like, how we're building here. Thanks for trusting us as well. Like, when, honestly, like I said, when you messaged that, I was like, bro, what the hell? And when you said you're keen to jump on, I was just grateful as a. Like and subscribe, everyone, to the YouTube. You can then go across to Bets and That. Make sure you subscribe, like over to Bets and That, which Charlie's about to go shoot. I wish you, your family, and everyone well over the next period and your future. And then can you tell Nate that I don't have a white fridge? And then he'll be happy that I didn't have a white fridge. Like I said, subscribe to everyone. That's the episode. Thanks to Charlie Fomuina for coming in and sharing a story with us at the Hurt Locker. That's the episode.
Cheers, man.